Hello, and welcome to episode 54 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a show about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I am Keith Carter, a displaced Clevelander but lifelong Cavs fan. My co-host is Arnav Chabra, a graduate student at MIT who really likes LeBron James and, by association, some of his crappy teammates. How's it going, Arnav?
It's going all right. I did not watch a second of that game, so...
I am very jealous of that.
Yeah.
I watched... Well, I mean, okay, so the Cavs lost their second game on consecutive nights in overtime, this time to the Miami Heat, who needed to win to still have a sniff of the playoffs, and it was a chance at the playoffs, and it was in Miami. And LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love all... Kevin Love did play. Tristan Thompson did not play. So they were missing three starters. And it... yeah, they lost in overtime. They were up nine, I think, going into the fourth quarter. And actually, it looks like... Yeah, they were up 11 going into the fourth quarter. And for the second day in a row, I think they gave up a 26-point lead in the fourth quarter yesterday, an 11-point lead today. You can say, like, well, they didn't have their starters. But yeah, I mean, 11 points is... that's a big lead to give up.
I don't care as much about this one as I do about the one yesterday. But yeah.
Yeah, just because they didn't have the talent on the floor.
Yeah. I mean, it's expected when you're only playing like, what, six or seven guys, you're going to run out of gas in the fourth quarter. That's pretty common.
Yeah.
And that's probably what happened in the other game too, because like LeBron had already played 33 minutes up to that point.
Yeah. Yeah, the Cavs were tired, definitely. Deron Williams played 46 minutes.
His stats look amazing. 14 of 25.
Yeah, there's something not so amazing about his stat line. Yes, that's it.
Almost had a triple-double.
Yeah, he almost had a quadruple-double if you count the turnovers. Yeah. One assist and three rebounds short. I mean, his 10 turnovers were because he had to do basically everything. Kay Felder played okay. He was plus five in only 7 minutes. I don't know why they didn't play him more. Larry Sanders played a sort of hilarious 2 minutes. He had two rebounds, 2 points, two turnovers, and two personal fouls. I believe his 2 points were, it was on a made field goal, so I believe that was his first made field goal since he's returned to the NBA. It's just not...
Look?
I mean, he looked like shit. He's not very good. He played okay tonight. Like, I think he was a positive on offense. Like, he was 5 of 9. And he was actually plus 5, which led the team. But his defense was not great, as usual. J.R. Smith, toward the end of the overtime, had a really, really bad missed assignment. He was 2 of 9. That sort of feels a little bit inexcusable.
He generally does that when like LeBron or these guys don't play. He pretty much takes it off for whatever reason, which is, I agree, it is inexcusable, because I've said it before, the only guy on this team who gets to take possessions and games off is LeBron, because he does it for a good reason, right? Like, he's played a ton of minutes, and for the Cavs to be successful, he needs to be well rested. Everyone else should be playing, and they should be not missing assignments.
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, I allow LeBron's, you know, whatever, lacoasting or whatever you want to call it, just because he has earned that right in a way that probably no one else in the history of the league has. It's still a little bit annoying that he does it, but whatever. Like, we know that he'll flip the switch come playoff time.
He's shown it time and time again that he'll do it, so...
Yeah. It's annoying that, like, other people, like, you know,
they kind of
depend on, depend on his body language and his behavior, but...
Because I think they expected Shumpert to be the guy to set, you know, the defensive tone. Obviously, that has not even been close to being the case.
Yeah, that was a little fraught. So the Heat remain in the playoff hunt. We were just looking at the standings before we started recording. I think there are 5 teams that can all finish with 40 in the loss column. And so it's still sort of muddy.
Three teams. Two teams. Only two.
Oh, wait, you're right. Chicago has 41 losses. You're right.
There's three teams that could end up with 41 in the loss column.
Yeah, Miami, Chicago, Indiana.
Yep. I don't know all the tiebreakers off my head, but if I had to guess, I would guess that we're playing Indiana. come Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, and that's not great for the Cavs.
Why? I mean, you know, Indiana's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean,
I guess
Milwaukee would be like Giannis. Chicago would be Jimmy Butler. I mean, I think Paul George is probably the worst of the three, so.
Yeah, I agree with that. The reason why I'm more worried about Paul George is because I think it'll mean LeBron has to expend more effort, but maybe that's unavoidable.
I mean, yeah, that's fine. He'll have to do it in the finals anyway, so.
Yeah. Do you think the Cavs will play their starters on, it's the day after tomorrow, right? They play Wednesday.
They might bring in Tristan, I think, just to sort of get his win back a little bit.
Yeah, I saw a tweet to that effect today saying he may play.
I've seen tweets. Is that going to... Did someone report that?
I don't remember who it was, but okay. I did see it.
I don't think LeBron's playing. Kyrie probably should not play. Kevin, again, they might play again just to sort of keep his rhythm or whatever going. Because he hasn't been shooting well at all lately. So, at least from the three-point line. He was efficient tonight, though.
He was good tonight. He was fine tonight, I would say. Boston, so Boston now is in the catbird seat for the first seed. They are ahead of the Cavs one game in the loss column. Is that right?
Both.
Yeah. So if Boston loses on Wednesday and if the Cavs win, the Cavs get the first seed. But if anything else happens, if Boston wins or the Cavs lose, they're the first seed.
Let's talk about those odds. So what do you think are the odds that Boston loses on Wednesday?
Who are they playing?
Milwaukee.
Boston would be smart to rest Boston. Their starters, but probably won't. And Milwaukee will have to play for various seeding purposes, although they have clinched the playoffs, so they may prefer rest over... I'm not sure. They probably don't want to be... Nobody wants to be the seventh seed because then they have to play the Cavs. Yeah. Nobody wants to play the Cavs in the first round.
It's hard to control that because there's so many things in play on the final day. So
they may want to lose to try to avoid the seventh seed for some reason. Like there's some weird things that can happen.
But honestly, I think they will play just because it's a younger team in general. Those teams
and it's in Boston.
And it's in Boston, yeah. I think they'll play.
I think so too. Play. Okay.
So Milwaukee at Bucks, I would say, what do you think? Boston, 60, 70?
Yeah, something like that. I wouldn't go as high as 70. Let's say 65. And 2-1.
35% chance that Milwaukee wins that game. Okay. What do you think are the odds that Toronto beats the Cavs?
That game is in Cleveland. It is fan appreciation night. And the Cavs have been pretty reluctant to rest their starters at home this year, and they might convince themselves that they have something to play for, whether it be the seating or whether it be money in satisfying the fans, or whether it be they want to develop some sort of, you know, quote unquote rhythm heading into the playoffs. I don't think it's a sure thing they'll rest James and Irving. They probably will. I would say there's like a 60 or 70% chance that they rest James and Irving. But there's a strong chance.
Easier.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, fine. And there's a strong chance the Raptors rest everybody too.
Yeah, I think the Raptors are definitely going to be resting people because they're locked into three at this point. So.
Right. They might want to play Lowry a little bit just so he can shake the rust off a little bit more, but he's been playing fine, so probably not. I think the Cavs are like 50-50 to win that game.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we probably have a weaker bench.
Yeah.
Despite what we saw today.
Okay, so that gives the Cavs a 17% chance of the one seed, right?
That's what 538 also says, which is great. We got the same number.
I wonder if they went into the future and listened to our show. Probably not. They probably have an actual model.
It's exactly what it says, 17%.
Yeah. I think our math had it at 17.5, so it rounds up to 18.
Close enough.
I don't care if the Cavs get the one seed.
I literally have not cared.
If the Cavs make the Eastern Conference Finals and they're playing Boston, that's... that's fine. I think that we're much better than Boston. And if we can't beat Boston in a game seven on the road, and it even comes to a game seven, we have other issues. So
yeah, I've said this before, like if the Cavs are going to lose to an Eastern Conference team, that's fine, because then there's no way they would have beaten, you know, Golden State or whoever.
Right. It's not like there's some opportunity to beat the Warriors that's lost by losing in the Eastern Conference.
Now there's something to be said for luck, right? Like teams get hot sometimes. Like there is a chance, but that team is so good in Golden State that they negate a lot of those opportunities. So
yeah. The Cavs have so many questions right now. Like, can Tristan Thompson's knee? Yeah. I don't know.
I would not trust anyone who says anything definitively about this team. I would not be surprised if they make the finals and look pretty competitive, and I would not be surprised if they lose in the second round.
I agree. Yeah, I just have no idea what to expect now. It's a little bit discomforting, I guess.
Yeah, like last year I was pretty disappointed in the regular season, but it was nowhere as this bad.
Right. I remember being bummed heading into the playoffs, and then the Cavs played really well in the playoffs, and I was still bummed heading into the finals. I was like, there's no way. But I was wrong on both counts.
But yeah, this year it's been way worse. The defense has been terrible.
They just have to hope.
Great, but
they have to hope that LeBron flips some switch and that cascades down to everyone else in a way that's sort of different than what we've seen for probably 60 of the 82 games this year.
It seems to me, at least to my eye, that whenever LeBron is being lackadaisical, that cascades down to the rest of the team, and it just looks exponentially worse than it should.
Yeah, I mean, there's a cart and a horse thing there. Like, LeBron looks lackadaisical when they're playing poorly, and they play poorly when LeBron looks lackadaisical, so it's hard to know, you know, which is the chicken and which
That's
is the
a good
egg.
Point, 'cause he does get frustrated because his teammates make poor decisions, whatever.
Right. I would too. I don't begrudge him that at all.
Especially being that good. Like, looking at it from his perspective, like, he sees things that these guys aren't seeing, right? So for him, it's not as obvious that why are these guys missing or making these mistakes.
Right.
Do you want to hear an incredible stat? Toronto is 14-2 in their own division. No other team is even close to being that good.
That's
interesting. And Golden State is 13-2 in their own division. That's weird.
So their division has the Nets and who else? I just had the standings open a second ago. The Heat. It has the Mag. I think their division has the Magic, the Nets, and the Sixers. And the Knicks.
Okay.
So you know, at some point it's like, well... their division is the Celtics, the Knicks, the Sixers, and the Nets. So they must have been good against Boston. Or maybe they lost twice to Boston. Who knows?
Who do you think is going to win the MVP?
I think it's going to be Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, and I don't think it's even going to be that close, to be honest with you. That game last night, I don't know if you saw it, but I saw the end of it.
I saw what happened.
Yeah, that was an incredible shot.
You know, I was pro Harden all season up until about the last 2 weeks, and Harden has really slumped, and I guess...
That's been the case for most voters. I think a lot of people have flipped just in the last couple of weeks, and it was a close enough race where, like, that's not egregious, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm glad that people are flipping. I mean, I wasn't sure, and I am processing the data until the end, and I'm making my decision at the last possible moment, and for now, it's Westbrook. I don't see that changing. Anything. There's just not enough time left for Harden to get back in my good graces, I don't think. Not that he cares, but...
I don't know if you've seen Daryl Morey sort of advocating for Harden pretty egregiously on Twitter. He's been talking about, like, wins and stuff. just some random cherry-picked stats that make Harden look good.
Yeah, I saw Harden himself was saying that he thinks wins should be a big consideration in the MVP race. Look, I do too. I consider it some. I consider, you know, RPM. I consider the actual numbers. Like, has somebody done something that's actually sort of interesting? You consider all these things. They're all factors. And, you know, every single reporter that votes on it has his own factors. And I just think that Westbrook's body of work is going to make him the first MVP that's not on a top two team in his conference for quite some time. And good for him.
Or even a top four team. I don't think we've ever had an MVP from...
I'm not sure about that. You might be right. It could be unprecedented in that way. But he's having, in many ways, sort of an unprecedented season.
On the third seed. But yeah. But anyway, yeah.
They're the seventh seed or they're the sixth seed? Oh, I think it's still... I think there's still something to be said about that. Or no, yeah, they're locked into six.
Yeah. They're playing Houston, which is going to be interesting. It's going to be Harden versus Westbrook.
I wonder, I mean, they should both rest, but they probably won't.
I do feel for Harden because he's had an incredible 3-year stretch. And in most decades, he probably would have one or two MVPs right now.
Yeah.
It's just he's playing at a time when guys like Steph, LeBron, Westbrook, etc. Kawhi have been having great seasons.
It's been a really fun discussion all year about the MVP race. It's great. I mean, and for any of those top four guys, and my top four are Kawhi, LeBron, Harden, Westbrook, probably in that order.
Most people's top four, yeah.
And if anybody voted for any of those guys in any order, you could make an argument for it because the voting criteria isn't who's the leader in RPM. That's just not what it is.
It's made for a reason, right? And meant you define how you want it to be. Don't be ridiculous with the definition, but yeah.
Do you think that whenever they were coming up with the MVP, look, I'm going to ask a rhetorical question here, but there's no way they could have known that it would be such a talking point on all the different talk radio stuff and the ESPN stuff. I mean, it's such a fun thing to talk about and it generates so much attention for the NBA. It's brilliant.
I don't watch a lot of other leagues, but it's definitely not as big of a conversation in other leagues, is it?
Baseball,
do people care about it in the NFL?
People care about awards in baseball. In the NFL, they don't really care. And the NFL is, the sample sizes are so small and the advanced analytics are so weak that you don't get the sort of analytics versus, I watch these games on TV crowd arguing with each other. In baseball, you do get a big argument between the analytics folks and the, this guy plays the game right folks. And there's good conversation there. But the NBA is just, I think, more popular. So you get, I don't know, at least to the stuff I pay attention to, there's more chatter.
Yep.
I want to talk about Tyronn Lue.
Should we talk about it at the end? So that's the last thing.
Or
we
can. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe the two things I wanted to talk about are Tyronn Lue, and then I wanted to go through the top three teams in the East. We've done this before, but we have a little bit more information than we've had before. So I could.
Let me ask you
this. In either order. Go ahead.
Do you think JR's bad game has anything to do with the fact that he was out last night? Because he and LeBron were spotted at some club, I think.
Well, let's discuss the evidence. Yes, I saw the tweet that said that LeBron, Tristan, and JR, or was Kyrie on that list?
No, I didn't see Kyrie. I think it was okay. LeBron. I don't know if even Tristan was on there, but probably was, because they're all from the same agent. So.
Yeah. So LeBron, JR, and Tristan were at some club in Miami at 3 a.m. last night, is what I read.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I mean, I remember when we first traded for JR, there was some funny thing I saw where when he plays day game.
He plays Sunday night. Yeah, Sunday morning.
Yes, Sunday day games are by far his worst
and it's
game.
Close. Yeah.
And he was living in New York, or he was playing for the Knicks at the time, where they have a fairly notorious nightclub operation. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe. Sure. That's sort of a fun thing to blame it on.
But I mean, we also have enough of a sample size at this point to say that he doesn't play well when LeBron doesn't play. So
yeah, and he has
LeBron was there, so it's not like he's going to let him do anything crazy,
right? And JR has so much stuff going on in his life right now. His kid is I think the breathing tube is out or whatever, but he has an infant child that's in really bad shape. And so, just imagine the trips to the hospital and dealing with that stuff. I mean, he's got stuff going on, plus the injury. I understand. I can make excuses for always playing worse, and it's a bummer that he's playing worse. I just hope he starts playing better soon. But I don't know if there's a lot of good reason for hope there.
Yeah, his defense is been kind of worrisome in general. His shooting, I think, is it's been okay, whatever. I don't really worry about his shooting in general because he's been a good shooter over the over his career, so that should be fine. But
why do people get worse on defense? So Iman Shumpert and J.R. Smith have both, as the narrative goes, been much worse defensively this year. So LeBron has been worse defensively, but I think we know why LeBron has been worse defensively.
Well, because he doesn't run back on
defense. Exactly. He's not trying as hard.
Pretty obvious, yeah.
So okay, so maybe that's what's going on with JR and Shumpert too, but I don't think so. It seems like the things that they're doing, which is basically not being as effective getting around screens and being good team defenders, it seems like those things, like their ability to do that well has somehow worsened. I don't understand that. Do you have a theory?
This is all based on my eye test and it's, you know, it's completely objective and I
know neither of us really like the eye test, but go ahead.
But I mean, in my opinion, I think if you're not playing solid man-to-man defense, it's easy to get disengaged because you're not as involved in the action. And then at that point, you can lose focus and get burned by like back screens and whatnot. And because JR and Shump both have been pretty lazy on their man itself, like they're not getting over screens, they're sort of, you know, lollygagging or whatever. So whenever some sort of a back screen comes, they're either behind in action or they've already lost focus and getting burned that way.
Yeah.
I think like once you're using your hands and you're really locked in, it's much easier to be sort of much easier to establish a laser focus. Which is why like even LeBron gets way better in the playoffs defensively, just because he's so locked in.
So I like that theory. I like that theory because that gives reason for hope. That implies that it's all some sort of mental state rather than some sort of physical change.
With Shumpert, though, we also saw him in the playoffs last year, and he was a bad defender. So I don't know if there's any hope for him. But with JR, I think there is some hope.
Yeah, Shumpert was awesome in 2015, but hasn't really been good since.
Like, he broke his hand, I get that. And, like, but why would his hand affect his overall defense?
Maybe he's more reluctant to make contact.
But he's still swiping at the ball.
He is. Maybe he's older and he's not as physically gifted as he was. I mean, it could be anything.
He did have like a, was it a hand? No, it was a groin injury that he was playing through during the playoffs, if I remember correctly.
He did, yeah.
And then he broke his hand in practice, if I remember. And then he came back a couple months later and has been back since.
Right. Yeah, I don't. Injuries are weird, and there are short-term effects and long-term effects from injuries. Attitude issues are bizarre and hard to measure. And I just have no idea what to expect from him going forward. Tyronn Lue freaking loves him. It's bizarre. He played 39 minutes tonight.
Like, tonight it's whatever since nobody was playing. But yeah, in general, he's been playing like 27 minutes a game, which is absolutely ridiculous for how bad he is.
So yeah, I don't know if you remember, but last season, Mozgov played all regular season and it was sort of annoying because Lou kept playing him sort of inexplicably. All the numbers said that he was bad and the Cavs were bad when he was on the floor. But then the playoffs rolled around and Mozgov, we never saw him again. So maybe it'll be the same with Shumpert. I'm not sure. Do you have any reason for optimism or any? Do you think that's a good reason for optimism there?
That's a fine reason. My only thing is I think Mozgov's minutes got tapered off at the end. So you sort of saw it coming.
There were signs that he knew.
Because all the important games, they kept starting Tristan.
Right.
But then Mozgov to the bench. Shumpert, we've seen some tapering lately. Obviously, tonight doesn't count because starters weren't playing. But he only played 6 minutes two games ago. And last game, even though it went to an overtime, I think he only played like 19 minutes or something. I'm fine with him playing. Like, we don't have the depth to just cut him off completely. I'm fine with him playing 5 to 10 minutes. That's whatever. But I think that's pretty much what it should be, at least in the Eastern Conference. And then come final time, he should not be seeing anything unless someone's injured.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably play him something close to whatever his regular minutes load has been in the first round. And maybe a miracle will happen and he'll suddenly be useful defensively again. And if that's the case, then great. Then they can continue playing him. But I don't expect that to happen. Bizarrely, I do expect that to happen with LeBron James, J.R. Smith, Kyrie Irving and other Cavs, but I don't expect that to happen with Iman Shumpert. And maybe I'm just being irrational, but...
Yeah, no, I don't either, because I've seen it in the playoffs already.
Right. Yeah, his playoff mode last year was poor enough that I don't... There's no like ceiling for him to get to.
Yeah.
So... Well, okay, so let's just continue talking about Tyronn Lue. So there are two things that I think he's pretty good at. And the first is I think he's pretty good at after timeout plays. I mentioned this, I think, on our last show or maybe the one before. I don't think there is data for after timeout plays, but certainly the narrative on him is that he's good. And to my eye, he's pretty good on after timeout plays. Do you agree with that? Can we just like check that box?
I definitely agree with that. And
okay.
Even though it wasn't obvious to me in the regular season last year, it became really obvious in the playoffs. Because you would see, after every timeout, Cavs would essentially almost always get a basket.
Right.
And it's been the case this season, too.
Okay. So even though we don't have like great data to present to explain that point, let's just say that he is good at after timeout plays. And that actually has some value, right? Because there's, you know, 6 or 7 timeouts in a game. And
especially in the playoffs, because the sample size is so tiny. Like it's,
yes. There's fewer possessions.
7 games, yeah.
And
games tend to be closer anyway, because everyone's trying hard and talent is so good in the NBA that right. when people try hard, it's not that.
So the value of 2 incremental points or 3 incremental points is big.
Exactly.
I think he's also good at sort of team chemistry and dealing with the media narrative. I think David Blatt was not very good with that. And I think Lue is like a 7 out of 10 on that one. And
yeah, I think stoked the fire a lot. Like for whatever reason, he would say the wrong things to the media.
Yes.
And they hated him completely because of that.
Yeah, he was a little bit smug. And I think that did.
Smug, yeah.
And Tyronn Lue is like the epitome of humble. He's, you know, he always calls everyone sir and ma'am and, you know, sort of has this sort of aw shucks attitude. And yeah, the media just loves it.
Yeah. And I would also say he was good at taking timeouts at the right time in the playoffs.
Oh, I agree with that too. That's a good point. Let me add that to my pro list. And it's
that's very important. Short. Against the Warriors, because those guys go on these streaks where they, you know, they'll have like a 15-0 run or something. And if you don't take a timeout at the right place, you'll pretty much lose the game within like 4 minutes or something.
Yeah. I watched the Warriors a lot less this season than I did last and less last season than I did the one before, because I find them really almost sort of upsetting to watch. Like they go on these runs and it just feels like, it just makes me feel so hopeless. Like the Cavs have just no chance because the kinds of runs they go on are just so impressive and they seem so unstoppable. And I don't remember feeling that way that many times during the finals last year. I mean, look, you know, the Steph occasionally makes back-to-back threes or whatever, and you call a timeout and they were able to sort of stem the bleeding. And yeah, so I agree. He has pretty good timeout timing. Do you have anything else you want to add to the pro list or the good list?
He's liked by the team, but I think you've already sort of hit on that with the team chemistry point.
Yeah.
He made good adjustments for the last three, at least in the finals, I would imagine. Like, they were doing pretty poorly. He put LeBron on Draymond. He took Dele out of the rotation. He cut off Channing Frye completely, which was a great idea, in my opinion, because Channing Frye was the reason, I think, why we lost Game 4. Game 4, yeah. Because Steph kept getting switched onto him, and then
right. He
kept burning him completely.
Right.
So, and then also starting Richard Jefferson was a smart idea instead of Channing Frye. Because when Kevin Love went out, you would have assumed that Channing Frye would have been his replacement because he's, you know, similar type of power forward, shooter, etc.
Yes.
But he put Richard Jefferson, which I thought was a smarter idea.
I agree that I like the adjustments that were made.
But I'm also, it was a small sample size, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
We can't tell. We'll never be able to tell until we see at least what happens at this playoff. So
yeah,
we can put that as a sort of the question mark.
Yeah. I agree that like those changes were extremely important, and he made them. I don't know Like, why didn't he make them sooner? Like, were they just random? It's just sort of hard to know. But certainly, it's not a ding against him.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in general, like in the playoffs, I think the Cavs are pretty, at least their offense was historically good. So I think I went back and looked. I think they have the second best offense ever for a winning team, which is pretty amazing. So.
Yeah, I mean, they played very well in the playoffs last year. Okay, so the bad list really for me is just two things. And one of them, I don't know. Okay, so one of them is a big deal. One of them is talent evaluation. So I don't like that he keeps playing Iman Shumpert. And I don't like some of the lineups he has out there. And I've heard excuses made for that he's experimenting, but I don't think the narrative that they're experimenting and they don't care about the one seed comports with my second complaint about him, which is minutes, minute management. Like, if they don't care, then why are LeBron James and Kyrie Irving playing 40 minutes on the second night of back-to-backs? Like, it's just sort of...
Right. I think it's... I don't know if that's the case, but I think it's okay to say that LeBron doesn't care, because you can sort of see that in the way he plays. But I don't think it's arguable that Tyronn Lue cares. It's pretty obvious that he does care. He's playing these guys heavy minutes. And he himself said it, I think, two games ago, that he's going to keep playing these guys until they get the first seed, until the blunder happened last night and he realized that these guys are playing way too many minutes and he had pressure from the outside to shut these guys down. That's the only time he didn't.
Who should dictate minute loads?
It should be the team, not the players.
Should it be the coach or should it be someone above the coach?
It should be the coach, and if the coach isn't doing it, somebody above him should be.
Is it reasonable to expect the coach to be current on what sports medicine says about rest?
I mean, he should have analysts working alongside who he should be taking advice from, right?
Yeah, I guess where I'm going with this line of questioning, I'm trying to lead the witness here. I mean, to some extent, okay, you could make the argument that Tyronn Lue should do everything he can to win every single game. Like, it's his job to win individual basketball games. And it is management's job to put handcuffs on him that has a more long-term view. Someone could make that argument. I don't know if that's how coaching works in the NBA. Like, so for example, Greg Popovich seems to have a fairly long-term view when doing things.
Right. So I think what I would say is it depends. Because for the coaches, their win record also kind of matters. Because let's say he gets fired and he needs another job.
Yep.
Like, that number matters, whether you believe it or not. Like, that's going to be on his resume or CV or whatever.
Yeah.
On the other hand, which is where I think the management should step in and empower him and say that we are looking at a long-term view here. We don't really care what your win-loss record is. Even if you guys don't do well in the regular season, I don't care what the number is at the end of it. As long as you're in the playoffs and as long as you're keeping guys healthy and fresh and you're developing good habits when they play. Keep them in low minutes, but when they're playing, play them properly and make sure that they're focused. I think that should come from upper management. But then the minutes themselves should be decided by Tyronn Lue. And if he's not doing it, then somebody should step in.
Couldn't management say, okay, so for example, all right, I'm infuriated with Tyronn Lue's minutes management this season. But I am also infuriated with management for not, like, physically restraining Tyronn Lue from playing LeBron so many minutes. And I'm not sure who I'm more mad at.
Right. Yeah. It's hard to tell, like, because on one hand, you want to give the coach as much freedom as he needs. But if it comes to the level where it's looking this bad, at that point, you want to step in, right? If you're Griffin.
Yeah. it's negligent. Like, Tyronn Lue, I'm annoyed that, like, he doesn't go and read, like, you know, whatever, sports medicine articles, and he doesn't go to Sloan and, like, listen to the doctors talk and say how important rest is and, like, look at the various studies that have been done by people with PhDs that say, you know, like, on the second night of back-to-backs or the third game in four nights, like, players, you know, have their performance attenuate. It's not really reasonable. It is reasonable to expect a coach to do that. The guy's going to pay like $10 bazillion to coach. And I think like he should be able to do a better job of minutes management than I could. But you can make an argument that it's not reasonable to expect him to do that. He should just try to win. And he shouldn't be reading the latest literature. He's obviously not reading the latest literature. Like whenever he gets asked about rest, he just sort of jokes about it and says, oh, don't ask me about this. Or, you know, he says something and then like does something completely different. Like he's just incompetent at doing it. And I blame him for that some, but I don't know. Like at some point it's got to be on management. Like they should realize how damaging it is to play these guys so many minutes and try to do something about it. But they just haven't. It's maddening.
It's weird because like he has said in the past that he wants to cut down LeBron's minutes, but he has done nothing to make that happen, right? Like,
yeah,
words are sort of meaningless. But he has acknowledged that should be done, but he hasn't actually done it. I think he just gets so carried away during the game itself, and he wants to win so badly that he's like, oh yeah, let's just play LeBron 2 more minutes. Who cares? But those 2 minutes. Over an 82 game sample size add up, right?
Yes, and the final 2 minutes are a lot more dangerous than the first 2 minutes.
Yeah,
they get worse. It's irritating. I don't know, and it's tricky because look, I'm sure LeBron wants to play every minute, and LeBron should want to play every minute.
Yeah,
and it should be like it should be like a little bit of a testy relationship between those two. Is Lou is like, look, we're gonna have a long-term view here. We're going to intentionally lose this game. We're not going to intentionally lose it, but we're going to intentionally lower our chances of winning this game in the short term in order to increase our odds of winning games in June. But they haven't done that at all this year. I mean, LeBron leads the league in minutes per game, or maybe he's off by a hundredth of a minute or something behind Kyle Lowry. But Lowry's younger. LeBron has more money. Whatever. We've been through this. It's problematic and it's hard, but I don't have much hope that anyone in the Cavs organization gets it, because if somebody in management got it, you'd think they would have communicated that down by now. If Lou got it, you'd think he would have like shown the results. If LeBron got it, you'd think he would have played fewer minutes. But it seems like they're sort of under this mass delusion that playing all these guys this ton of minutes is the right thing to do.
Yep. Yeah, it's a tough position.
So let's say they fired Tyronn Lue and they went out and got some other former player. I mean, he's going to do the same thing. It needs to come from management.
Yeah, or it needs to be a sort of a progressive coach, quote unquote.
Sure, yeah. Like if they got Tom Thibodeau, LeBron's going to play 48 minutes a game.
Yeah.
I don't know who they would get short Greg Popovich that would do it right.
I don't know.
Do you think there is any chance Lou will get fired?
I think if the Cavs don't make the finals and it's not because of an injury issue, mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think it's in the cards, right?
I don't know.
If they make the finals and completely get swept, I think it's still in the cards. Who knows? Like this regular season has been really bad, and I'm sure David Griffin has been keeping tabs on it. I just think he's also sort of caught up in the switch narrative. But if there's no switch, then all of this looks even worse.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Griffin talked a lot around the Blatt time. When he fired Blatt, he was like, look, I sit in the locker room. I feel like I have my pulse on the locker room. And the locker room just didn't seem positive enough. Can the locker room possibly be positive now?
I think it's hard to tell how much these guys care, right? Like LeBron and Tyronn Lue were pretty positive yesterday.
Yeah.
In the press conference. They
were mad at the refs, but they were generally positive. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Weird team. This is by far the weirdest team I've ever followed.
So. Yeah, I feel it's so weird because, in a week we're going to be talking about something completely different. There's going to be some new drama. There's going to be some new data that gives us recency bias, and we'll be, excited about that or depressed about that. It's crazy. I'm glad the playoffs are finally here, though. I'm tired of this not knowing.
Yep. I think hopefully we get to see the Cavs after they've turned on their defense, and they're much better. Again, hoping for that. I don't know if it's going to happen, but
if it's the Pacers in the first round, you think that goes five games?
Yeah, probably five. I think Paul George is good enough that he can take a game, and Cavs defense is bad enough that they could give up a game pretty easily.
Yeah,
maybe even six. Who knows? But I think five is what I would predict. Cavs in five.
That would probably be my prediction. So if they get past the Pacers, then it would be the Wizards in the second round.
Which I think at this point is probably preferable to Toronto.
I guess we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording. So, you know, the point guard is the best player on both of those teams with John Wall and Kyle Lowry. Wall is better defensively, and he's a little bit of a better passer, but he can't shoot. That game against us, notwithstanding, where he started 10 of 10. I think your logic is that a guy who can't shoot is easier to game plan for.
In general, those guys tend to have, if you look at sort of their distribution, they'll have a smaller variation, so their peak will be high, but their spread will be pretty small. Just like LeBron. So if you look at LeBron's sort of game score, quote unquote, and plot it out over the course of the season, he's pretty consistent because from a game-to-game basis, you know, he'll get his assists, he'll get his rebounds, he'll get his whatever 25 points or not.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not going to have like a 50-point night. Maybe, again, it's possible for him in the playoffs, but in the regular season, that's probably not going to happen. And he's also not going to have, you know, like an 8-point night because he's not depending on jump shots for the most part.
Right.
Same thing with the John Wall. Like, he'll be good. He'll be very good for pretty much most of the games. But it's hard to see him, you know, explode like Kyle Lowry can and like drop 50 on you and take a game.
Yeah, I guess I'm just a little bit stung by the games against the Wizards this year. They've all been close. And watching John Wall. The Cavs' transition defense is worst in the league. And watching John Wall, who might be the best transition point guard in the league, him or Westbrook, go against the Cavs' awful transition defenses left me with some PTSD. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, that's sort of biasing me a little bit here, but the Wizards scare me. They've got a good center. They've got good shooters. Markieff Morris isn't that great, but
Cavs are so bad defensively that I think they need to see a team that's not good defensively either, because that way their offense can at least carry them. If that makes sense, right?
That makes sense.
Teams won't have problems scoring on the Cavs anyway. So as long as they see a team that's bad defensively, at least they can score on them too. So.
Right. Yeah, the Cavs throughout all of this have remained a very good offensive team.
Which isn't surprising in the least, but because they were dominant. Their jump in offense was huge from the regular season to the playoffs last year. And again, some of that, to be fair, was just hot shooting from the guys. Like, everyone was shooting out their minds for two series. But who knows? That could happen again. Like, they have good shooters. That's
not out. They do. They do. They definitely do. So then, the Raptors would not be... it would presumably be Celtics-Raptors in the other side of the conference semifinals.
I don't see the Celtics beating them. I think the Raptors will be favored in that series.
That's certainly the fashionable thing these days. The Raptors' defense has been much improved since Kyle Lowry went down, and now Lowry's back.
Also, Raptors at one point were, the best offense in NBA history? And it was...
They were for the first 20 games of the season, yeah.
Yeah, 20 games again is... all playoffs, right? Like, I'm just saying they have that ceiling. Let's put it, if Lowry gets going, they have that ceiling, which the Celtics don't have.
Yeah, but remember, a big part of that was DeRozan was like shooting like 90% or whatever. Look, I'm exaggerating, of course, but
he was pretty hot too. Fair enough.
And then, of course, he came back to earth. It's possible, over small samples, anything's possible. I guess I'm equally scared by the Raptors and the Wizards. I'm not that scared by the Celtics for reasons we've discussed.
Yeah, which is why I don't care about the seeding, because they're the only ones who'll have, the first who'll have home court against us in the Eastern Conference, and that's fine.
Right.
Like, LeBron has played games in Boston, and he'll be fine.
Yeah.
And again, remember, if it's a, I've said this before, if you're good enough to sweep a team, you probably don't want to have home court against them because you won the later, the last two games on your home floor. Because the series in general, in my opinion at least, from what I've seen, they tend to get closer as it gets longer and longer. So the later games, you want to have them on your own home floor as much as possible.
Right.
Which is why, like, you want to have home court over a full seven-game series because then the two out of the last three games are on your home floor.
Right. Yeah, and it's a massive, massive difference. I think.
But if you're going to sweep, it doesn't matter if you have home court or not. It's two games on their floor, two games on your floor.
Yep. Yeah, the home court advantage doesn't show up till game seven.
And, or, well, maybe a little bit game five, like if you're getting beat that badly, because then you can lose in four, you know, four to one.
That's a fair point. But there isn't like a large asymmetry, I guess, until
exactly. So I think Cavs will be fine without home court. Like, it's not a problem. And if becomes a problem, it's probably good that they lost, so they don't get embarrassed in the finals.
Right. So yeah. So we don't have to go through the heartache of a beatdown in the finals. I don't have to agonize whether I need to go to the games. Okay. Well, you have anything else you want to talk about?
I just wish that this was their perspective from the beginning of the season, where they, you know, didn't care about seeding at all.
Yeah.
Played LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin low minutes, but in the minutes that they played, they were locked in. And to be fair, some of it is like the players' fault because they just don't focus for certain games, and then you can't keep them for low minutes because they'll just end up with like a 30. They'll only win like 30 games or something. But
yeah, I mean, look, to be
it's both. I don't know.
Yeah, it is both. I mean, the Cavs could have experimented for like a 10-game stretch with playing LeBron 31 minutes a game and seeing if he went at, you know, I think he's normally at like 70%, and seeing if he went at 90% for those 31 minutes. And maybe during those 31 minutes, they establish like really good habits. They have like a really good D rating with LeBron on the floor and everybody's playing really hard. And then for those minutes that LeBron's not on the floor, they don't play as well, but the, you know, maybe their rating with him on the floor was higher. And in aggregate, maybe they lose four or five more games in the regular season, but he's ready to go into the playoffs and he's fresher. And his habits, the team habits around the behavior they have is just better. Now they're just like this mess where like they, you know, they blow huge leads, they don't play any defense, we don't really know what we have. And we're left praying for, you know, some magical switch and some huge change in attitude. And maybe that'll happen. And maybe we're going to look silly in 2 weeks or even hand-wringing about this. But I would have preferred my strategy.
Yeah. I mean, I would be happy to look silly about this.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's going to wrap it up for this exciting, upbeat episode of Cavalytics. Hopefully our next episode, our energy's a little higher. As always, you can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @cavalyticsnba. Thanks for listening, and go Cavs!